Brought to you by North Memorial Health, where customers are treated like family. That means a big smile when you walk in the door and making sure your visit is as pleasant as possible. It's just like your family treats you. Find your healthy family at northmemorial.com/family.
Welcome to another episode of the Access Vikings podcast. My name is Andrew Kramer, joined by Ben Gessling of the Star Tribune. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Andrew.
We are live from a tap house in Eagan.
We are.
It's exciting times here in the middle. We have no fears for viruses. I don't know what people are talking about.
No, we bravely are out in the wild.
We are. We're going to talk defensive backs, Vikings corners, secondaries, the decisions that they have to make, because they do have a lot of them to make between Xavier, McKenzie, Anthony Harris. They have one safety, one under contract for next year, and that is Harrison Smith. It's amazing to think that that contract extension that Harrison signed, boy, was it 2014?
I think 15? So. It was a long time ago.
It's only 2 years left on that deal, but he's the only one left under contract at safety right now.
Yeah, the key to playing that deep into a contract in the NFL is continuing to show that you're worth it.
Playing very well.
And he has done that.
Yeah, Anthony Harris, speaking of playing well, another guy who's played very well, is going to get paid by somebody. Ben, let's start there. Every indication we've gotten is that it's not going to be in Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you see the prices that are going to be out there for him, the way he has approached this week, I think, is indicative of what he's planning to do. He has
making the rounds.
He has certainly been making the rounds, and that he's not been a guy that's done that. It has felt to me like a fairly calculated effort to raise his profile, to kind of give people an idea of who he is and maybe get his name out there a little bit. He's not a guy that probably has a ton of name recognition. People in Minnesota know who he is, and people who are following the NFL, the talent evaluators, certainly know who he is. But I think some of it is to add a public piece of it so that it's not just, oh, you're the guy that plays next to Harrison Smith. He had a pretty darn good year in his own right. So it certainly seems like if there was any thought, and I don't think there should have been, but if there was any thought of, oh, maybe he's going to play this quietly and come back here on a friendly deal that still gives him a raise but allows the Vikings to keep him under their structure, I didn't think it was likely at first, and I certainly don't think his actions would suggest that it's likely now.
Yeah, we know he would like to stay here. He would certainly like to come back if they had the money for him.
Yeah.
They just don't, and that's the problem. You can't keep everybody, and a guy that you're not going to be able to keep is Anthony Harris, who's going to command probably $14 to $15 million per year on a contract. Where do you think he might end up? I mean, I don't know if you've prepared. I haven't thought too much about this question in terms of free agent options for him, but there's going to be teams like the Browns, Cleveland.
Yeah.
Kevin Stefanski knows him fairly well. They need safeties. I think that's one target for him. Where else do you think he could end up?
That would be the one I would keep my eye on the most. They have money. Kevin Stefanski's there. Joe Woods did not coach him here, their defensive coordinator there, but Jeff Howard, their defensive backs coach, did coach him here. So I would think, and I've heard, that there could be some interest from Cleveland. I would put them high on the list. I can't sit here and say I have an encyclopedic knowledge of other teams that need safety help, but there are a number of them that have quite a bit of money that I would think would have an interest in a guy like that tied for the NFL lead in interceptions last year and has shown he can make plays when he's given the opportunity to do so.
Hey, Patriots safety Devin McCourty's a free agent. Maybe he goes to New England.
Yeah, I mean, teams that
Philadelphia
make a schematic
help?
Fit. Or that would be a schematic fit. I mean, the Raiders could make some sense given the fact that Paul Gunther, their defensive coordinator, has worked with Mike Zimmer and plays a similar scheme. So he could be a good fit in that sense for a team like that.
Yeah, Philadelphia.
They've got some money to spend.
Philadelphia is interesting because they play a lot of quarters. Anthony Harris, the Vikings, played a lot of quarters. Jim Schwartz, not a foreign defensive coordinator to anybody that knows the NFC North. So that would be interesting to me, too, if we potentially would see him going to a team that the Vikings view as kind of a rival in Philadelphia.
Yeah, a little bit.
But, yeah, I just don't know. I don't even see a 1% chance of Anthony staying here.
No, I don't really either.
It seems like a strong thing to say at this point when anything can happen, but the way that the Vikings financially are set up, the way that Mike Zimmer talked about the safety position at the combine, as we've documented already, It's just it's not something that they prioritize, and unfortunately for Anthony, I just don't think that they're going to have the money to keep him. So,
I guess the other one I'd throw out really quickly for him, and they've got a lot of things to attend to of their own that may supersede this on their priority list, but the Cowboys, simply because George Edwards is there now and would be able to vouch for Anthony Harris in – I mean, Mike McCarthy has seen Anthony Harris over the years coaching against him in Green Bay, not in the capacity that he played last year, but George Edwards being there would be another familiar face and maybe would be another guy that would stump for a player like that if the Cowboys have money left over after dealing with Amari Cooper and Dak Prescott.
A lot of moving parts in Dallas.
Yes.
Safety market's interesting in general, Ben. Jayron Kearse, also a free agent for the Minnesota Vikings. He's going to be on the market. Anderson Dejo. If the Vikings just need reliable depth and somebody they know, especially somebody that's a veteran and might take a cheap deal, I'd be shocked if Anderson Dejo doesn't return to Minnesota in that kind of a same vein, because he went and got somewhat of a bigger deal in Philadelphia last year. They moved on quickly. Vikings got him off the scrap heap. I think they could do the same thing this year with Anderson Dejo.
Yes, they could.
He's a reliable special teamer, somebody that could give them the depth that they don't currently have.
There are certain things you can count on Anderson Dejo for.
He's one name to keep an eye on, but I don't know if Jayron Kearse is going to be finding his way back here either, because Ben, all signs point toward him wanting to look for another deal elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few. A quick spin through the history of Jayron Kearse's Twitter account, at least. You may need to use the Wayback Machine to get all of it, because I think a few have been deleted. But, yeah, it certainly seemed like he was not thrilled with the trajectory of his usage and playing time here, and there's no reason for him to be thrilled with it. I would think he's probably gone unless the market doesn't shape up for him, and he says, yeah, okay, I'll come back and give it another shot.
Yeah, and I don't think it's just whimsical on social media either. I remember talking to him in, I think it was November or December, after he made a big play in Dallas to help seal that game. And he had talked about, you know, wanting to be somewhere where he felt like they had his back.
Yeah.
And after a point of that arrest last year, he didn't feel that way. He lost his captaincy. I don't think he felt like the coaching staff had his back. He lost his role a little bit.
How did Mike Zimmer describe that one? Was that the one where he used the word idiotic?
Oh, to describe the arrest?
Yeah.
I can't remember the exact word.
I don't know if that was him or Holton Hill. There's one point he used that term last year.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but he wasn't happy. To your point, he wasn't happy.
I mean, there's no reason he should have been.
Yeah. To your point, he wasn't happy about the DUI arrest with Jayron in October. It's not something that reflects well on what the Vikings want, nor that any team really wants. But Vikings do try to pride themselves on some kind of culture that is transcendent beyond, you know, just, you know, wordplay, you know, lip service, I should say. Yep. Anyway, so with that, I don't know. I think if Jayron comes back and they basically it's an equivalent deal between Minnesota and somewhere else, maybe they do end up getting him back. I don't know. But they're going to be hurting, and it's going to be something where they either need to draft somebody, Antoine Winfield Jr., or they need to go out and sign some help in free agency. If that's not Anderson Dejo or re-signing Jayron Kearse, it's somebody else that they might know from elsewhere.
Winfield is the subplot I'm rooting for.
The junior?
Yes. That would be very interesting.
Why is
for
that?
A couple of reasons. Rick Spielman talked about one of them at the Combine, in the sense that he's basically known Antoine Winfield and a number of these other Gophers who played at Eden Prairie since they were little kids, because his son, J.D. Spielman, played with a lot of those guys. In fact, we tried to ask Rick about it at the Combine, and I think you asked him, what's your impression of those guys? He said, are you asking for my scouting report? Like, no, just a memory from watching them play high school football. And he said he's a good football player, I think is what he was willing to share along those lines. But there's that piece of it. I mean, despite the fact that he wasn't willing to share feelings with us, he certainly has a long history with Antoine Winfield Jr. And the way his father left here was not exactly on great terms. Antoine Winfield Sr. was very upset with the way the Vikings handled things there. If you remember back in 2013, he was coming off a great year in 2012, had been their best defensive back. They had sort of pegged him for a smaller role, kind of starting to move him towards a nickel role, and he ended up playing pretty much full time. And there was basically a disconnect about, would they approach him about restructuring his contract to stay? He felt like they didn't really do that. and they said, well, we did, but you didn't want to talk about it. And I think I can remember that playing out through various different – I mean, the Vikings leaking to reporters that are sympathetic to their side of things, Winfield's agent probably trying to combat some of that. There was quite a bit of that going on back then. And Antoine Winfield Sr. hasn't been back for much of anything since then.
No, he hasn't.
And
yeah.
The following – I mean, the other subtext to that at the time was they cut him. Leslie Frazier, he signed with Seattle. Winfield signed with Seattle. He got cut there. Leslie Frazier was trying very hard to get him back on a restructured deal. Kind of was the envoy there. It didn't happen. Almost did in the next season when they went to London. They got close to signing him to bring him back and then didn't do it and then ended up giving that money to Josh Freeman. So that's a trip way down memory lane, but I bring it up because, I mean, the Vikings are ultimately going to have control of whether they draft Antoine Winfield Jr., but the history there is extensive in a number of different ways.
You're saying if you cut Antoine, he might not bleed purple.
He might not. I think it's more complex than, oh, you grew up in Minnesota, your dad played for the Vikings, why wouldn't you love to be here?
And I meant senior when I said that. Junior has his own reasons and own opinions, I'm sure, separate of his father. It's one of those things where people might say, like, oh, it wouldn't be such a great hometown story. It's like, well, it's not. First of all, it's not a hometown story. Yeah. You know, the Winfields are from Ohio. He grew up in Texas in high school. Yes, he spent middle school, the junior, when he was in Minnesota and stuff like that. But it would be cool to see. He's a very great player in Minnesota.
Yeah, he was fantastic.
And Junior told the story of why he went to the Gophers. It had nothing to do with his father. He initially, on the recruiting visit, was like, why would I take a trip up there? Why would I do this? His friend from Texas, from Minnesota, Carter Coughlin, that he had met through high school football, was just like, yeah, you need to come up here and you need to do this. And he did and fell in love with it just on the one visit. And that's why he signed.
Yeah.
And so it was an interesting connection because you just see, oh, a Winfield Jr. playing for the Gophers. It must be because they're so connected to Minnesota. No, it just kind of seems that way.
Well, he was connected to teammates at Eden Prairie because his dad played in Minnesota. So indirectly, yes,
yep.
But not because he was living here the entire time before he went to college. I mean, Antoine Winfield Sr.'s last down for the Vikings was in a playoff game in 2013. So it's been a long time.
Yeah, Junior had friends that he had made, from then, and then that's the reason why he came back here to go to college. And so he could have gone, though, to Ohio State. He could have gone a multitude of places. He was that good.
Yeah.
And so now it seems like he's going to be a first-round pick, and he seems like a New England Patriot. I don't know.
Yeah.
He just does.
I could see that.
He just does. It'll be interesting to see what the Vikings –
has that Patriots-esque – kind of sixth sense of where he's supposed to be on the field. I mean, you saw so many plays like that in college. I think of the interceptions he made last year where he comes out of nowhere. It looks like he's coming out of nowhere, but it's either him baiting the quarterback or making a read saying, here's where he's going with the ball. I'm going to come in and make a play. I think the one in the Penn State game, I saw something a couple weeks ago with him doing a film breakdown of that, and it was basically just film study, him knowing where he's supposed to be and making a lot of plays from that. In college, you have to think that's just going to get better in the NFL. And the fact that his dad was as good and really as smart and as conscientious of a player as I've covered. I covered him my first year on the beat in 2012 and, you know, very much was the heart and soul of that defense. I mean, they had a lot of veterans, Kevin Williams, Jared Allen, Chad Greenway. But, I mean, you can ask Harrison Smith that. Antoine Winfield Sr. was kind of the guiding force for him as a rookie and I think for a lot of guys in that defense that year.
Yeah, Junior's a really intelligent player, too. Picks right up off of that. I think he had said he was remembers being 11 years old, sitting on his dad's lap, watching his dad scout the Lions way back when. So you just don't get that many kind of advantage. Too many players don't get that kind of advantage growing up. And so the Vikings will be lucky to get him. It'll be interesting to see how high they're willing to draft him because it might need to be very high. Let's look at free agent safeties that are available. Let's just run down the list. Justin Simmons got franchise tagged in Denver. Anthony Harris is atop the list. Devin McCourty out of New England. Some former Packers, Demarius Randall and HaHa Clinton Dix. Rodney McLeod is also available, the former Philadelphia Eagle. At 29, he might be – I look at him as a potential fit for the Vikings just because he's a good center field option, and that's what they're losing in Anthony Harris.
I don't think – this would necessarily – I think he's more of a box safety, but Carl Joseph would be, I think, a little bit of a name to keep an eye on. I say that for two reasons. Number one, playing for the Raiders in a similar scheme. Number two, I believe they took a look at him when he was coming out of the draft. I think in part – I got to if I'm remembering this incorrectly, I don't think I am, but check me on it if I am. I feel like they looked at him as a returner. I think Mike Prefer went and worked him out in that capacity. So I do think they took a look at him, and he's only 27. It would depend on how consistent they feel like he's going to be and if they feel like he's worth the money. But they do, I believe, from what I recall, have some history with him. So that's another name maybe worth keeping in mind.
Yeah, they're going to need special teams help from that group, too, whoever they do sign at safety. So there's some former Dolphins that are available. Walt Akins is a 28-year-old safety. He's one that you're going to be like, who? But it's a bargain-level option that they're going to be able to afford, potentially, and one that could reunite with Marwin Maloof, who was the assistant special teams coach over there back when Walt was playing there. So there are some options. There are going to be some names that they sign just for depth. I imagine
like every other name on this list has been through Green Bay. Free-agent safeties. They've
pretty much
a lot of them.
They have a lot of unsuccessful guys. Kirk Coleman, it looks like he's available as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it was in Vikings camp. Mike Zimmer's first year here, and they cut him, and he went and had a very successful couple of years in Carolina. I think had 7 interceptions 1 year. Could be a guy they look at. He played for Leslie Frazier last year in Buffalo. His agent, Blake Barrett, is here in the Twin Cities, so I could see that maybe, but I don't think I put it at the top of the list. It's another name just to kind of file away in the back of your mind.
Yeah, when you have as many openings as they do, you got to keep your options open. So I wouldn't be shocked if they took a look at all these guys and just see how the chips fall.
Former Gophers, too. Eric Murray and Brian Body Calhoun.
Coming a week or two.
Free agents.
This podcast also might end up sitting for a week because we didn't even get to the point that while the NFL players are voting on the proposed CBA this weekend, depending on the coronavirus and everything that's going on around that, they could delay the start of free agency next week. So we could be looking at a situation where there's more speculation and more of this chatter leading up to a delayed start of the league year, which is supposed to be Wednesday the 18th. Formal talks are supposed to happen Monday the 16th with agreements going on all next week. But, Ben, that could be pushed back a whole week.
Yeah, lots of things in flux here. It'll be interesting to see what the NFL does because I could see one side of things where, and this is a bit cynical, but yeah, we've spent enough time around the NFL that I think it's at least worth putting into the record for consideration. They will have the sporting news cycle to themselves if they do free agency next week. I have to think there's some corners of the league that's like, hey, yeah, we wouldn't mind that. On the other hand, the optics when stock market is cratering, people are trying to make sure they don't catch this thing, and you're announcing free agent deals, the optics may not be great either.
Tens of millions of dollars.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But there's not really a playbook for a lot of this. So trying to predict where it's going to go from minute to minute this week has seemed difficult to do at times.
No, so all we can do is kind of preview right now where things stand and where it's going to be once the opening bell kind of rings for free agency. So
whenever that bell is.
First domino, though, that Ben, I expect to fall, we've talked about this before and you've reported on it, is probably Xavier Rhodes getting released.
Yes.
And freeing up upwards of, what is it, $9, $10 million or something?
Yeah, I believe it's 8.8 that comes off, and then maybe it's 8. It's north of 8.
Yeah, but it's around there. So point being that they're going to move on from the number
8.1 that comes off, 4.8 dead money.
For the number one corner. And so it's kind of a situation I think we expected. Yeah. Xavier Rhodes talked to him at the end of the year, and he said, look, I'm not thinking about it. If they want me here, I'll be here. If not, I won't be. And so I think he understands what's coming.
Yeah. Trey Wayne said that post a couple of weeks ago about 29, where are we going, fam? I mean, that was kind of an indicator of that they both think it's coming.
Absolutely. That they're both also, yeah, they're not just that they're going to be free agents as Trey is scheduled to be and as Xavier will eventually be, we assume. But also the fact that they're not coming back here.
Yeah. And I think from what I've heard from people that have talked to the Vikings about their plans, it has seemed as though the Vikings, it's almost a foregone conclusion that they're going to release Xavier Rhodes from those conversations. So I would expect that any time. In fact, I've talked to a couple of people that say, I wish if they're going to do it, I wish they'd just do it so that he has time to shop around a little bit and let it be known he's going to be in the market. I think most people assume he will be. So you can do probably some of that already. But as of the recording of this, they haven't done it. Still, the fact that they will seems to be almost a fait accompli.
Going beyond that, it almost seems inevitable that they might have to replace all three corners.
Yeah, very possible.
Mackenzie Alexander's also a free agent, one of the better slot corners last year. Trey Waynes being a free agent on the outside, and then obviously Xavier, a likely cap casualty. Ben, where does that leave them in just replacing all three corners, and what do you think the market might look like? You wrote about Trey Waynes this week. What do you think the market might look like for him?
It's going to be really interesting to see that one because he's 27. He'll be 28 later this year. It's, you know, it's not a bad time to hit the market, but if you're 25, certainly you'd prefer that, 25, 26. And it's going to be interesting to see how people value him because – on one hand, he's been a starting corner now for the last 3 years and has played a lot more than that in previous years, or has at least played sparingly in previous years. He's been part of a very good defense. He's a good run stopper. He's athletic. I mean, he has all the stuff you want. He's 6'1", and he can run. But the sum has not, or the whole has not really matched the sum of the parts at times, where you look at him and say, this guy has everything you'd want to be a really good cover corner. He's tall, he can run, he's physical. All of that in terms of a man cover corner, a guy that has to press a fair amount of the time, is there. But he gets beat a lot down the field. He's had times where he's been grabby. Not as much this year. Cut that way back this year. But I think the previous year he had 7 penalties in 2018. And he doesn't come down. He doesn't make a lot of plays on the ball.
Yeah, I remember Jerry Gray, the former DBs coach now in Green Bay, but the former DBs coach for the Vikings, talking about how he just, when it came to contesting catches, he didn't get up there. It didn't elevate at the right time, had kind of issues timing that. And then, as you said, making those plays on the ball, whereas he got flagged way too many times instead of making that play, that pass deflection, that interception, whatever it may be.
And you hear a lot with him about how much does he want to go after it. I mean, you know, that, I think, has been a question with him. Mike Zimmer has hinted at it at times.
Oh, 100%.
I distinctly remember his first year, at the end of Trey's first year in 2015, we asked Zimmer before the NFC North title game in Green Bay, because he was going to be – he basically was ending his redshirt year. He didn't play a lot on defense, and he was playing in his home state. So I asked Zimmer about, you know, what the year has been like, and I remember asking him something about, you know, it's probably not really a bad – thing if you get a redshirt year and you have time to learn at this level, right? And he said, yeah, it's not a bad thing if a guy is talented and wants to, I can't remember what the wording was, compete or get better or whatever. And then he goes, he's talented, so, and then left the pregnant pause there. It's like, okay, that, I mean, Zimmer at times, probably more so back then, would do this where he would tell you a lot with what he's not saying.
He'll send his messages through the media, and players pick up on that and
get Parcells like
and get either very upset or motivated or both by
maybe
it.
Maybe both.
Yeah.
One struck me back then as a breadcrumb.
I forgot about that one. Yeah.
That one, I remember when he said that because I think we'd heard a little bit of that.
Yeah, and he
– and that kind of
– it's funny.
Was a pretty big breadcrumb.
It's funny you bring that up because he talked about – Zimmer talked about Trey and McKenzie almost as opposites in that sense.
Yes.
Because I remember with McKenzie, it was, well, I'd rather have to tell a guy whoa than go. Meaning, like, I have to slow McKenzie down because he gets out of control sometimes and does things.
Yes.
But at least the fire's there. With Trey, it was almost the opposite, where he almost had to cattle prod him sometimes to get him to get going. And so I think that it was almost the opposite issues. McKenzie, speaking of, I would be shocked if he found his way back here.
Yeah. You reported some on that
not,
in terms of his sense of your sense of what he wants.
Not only because of financially, but because of how much he's looking to just cash out, first payday, all that kind of stuff, and the Vikings won't be able to afford it. But also because of the fact that he's had differences with his coaching staff, and now it's turning over. And so now he's just starting anew, and that doesn't necessarily mean it's a good thing. Because Mike Zimmer's still here, the main guy who's going to be working with the defensive backs and the guy he's had many arguments with over the years. And McKenzie wasn't happy that Zimmer made him play through a knee injury in that season finale. And then he needed surgery after that. Then he missed the playoff games, and he didn't get to build off of what was a very good year for him.
Yeah.
on the postseason stage, that rubbed him the wrong way pretty strongly. It's the latest difference he had with the coaching staff. I would just be shocked if he said, okay, I will take less than top dollar to come back to Minnesota.
Yeah, I would think if you're looking at it, the smart money certainly would be that you have three guys who are gone. I mean, if I was going to say which one of those three is the most likely to be back, I don't even know where I'd go with it. Because I think you look at all of them, I guess maybe Trey, simply because they may have the most interest in bringing him back.
Man, I don't
even
know.
If his market falls out, I wouldn't put a high percentage on any of those three.
Just based on how they played, I'd venture to guess McKenzie's the one they would be most open to getting back just because of how well he played.
Yeah, but I think for the reasons you just outlined, I mean, it takes two to tango.
Exactly.
And maybe the market craters. But for a slot corner that's coming off a good year, I wouldn't think that it would if people believe he's healthy.
And so people, to put in context, the last year's top slot corner was Justin Coleman, a guy who found his way through Vikings camp once upon a time as an undrafted free agent. He went to the Lions for $9 million a year, 4 years, $36 million. That was the top of the market last year. Typically, it goes up. This year, you're going to see Mike Hilton, who's the Steelers' slot corner. You're going to see Chris Harris Jr., the Broncos' slot corner. You're going to see Mackenzie Alexander. You're going to see a lot of top slot corners out there. I don't know if that dampens the available money for Mackenzie or helps drive it up for all of them.
Yeah.
I don't know. It remains to be seen. But I would venture to guess that they would want Mackenzie back because he was the better one. But you're right. I don't see him actually making the decision to do it. Other veteran corners out there, one name that sticks out to me, he's older. He would come in, help younger guys. Jonathan Joseph, former Texans outside corner. I could see him just because he's got history with Gary Kubiak. Gary would understand what it's like to coach against a guy like that in practice, certainly. And you just wonder if they liked what they hear out of Gary regarding that they might take a run at him. Because, Ben, we've actually reached the point, I don't know if you know this, we've reached the point where I don't think there are any 40-year-old former Bengals out there.
There are not. I mean, at least not ones that are currently playing in the NFL.
Sorry.
Terrence Newman on retirement.
I meant available. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think we have.
Zimmer's been here in Minnesota long enough that he's exhausted his former players.
Now, the new defensive backs coach, Jarrante Jones, did come from from Cincinnati.
Yeah.
So perhaps there's another run of former Bengals. Maybe there's a new generation.
New generation? I could
Darqueze
see that.
Darqueze Dennard, does that do anything for you? He would have been in the same draft class.
I think it was
2014.
It wasn't Trey, was it? No.
No, it was the year before.
Okay. Justin Gilbert, Darqueze Dennard.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it hasn't worked out all that well, but probably a guy they took a look at. I think at least I think I remember them taking a look at him a little bit.
And you know Zimmer's going to have that whole, like, yeah, I can fix him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know him a little bit. You know, our guys know him. We'll fix him. The typical coach thing.
Yeah, I would expect that that's probably true. I think it would be better to look at the bargain bin than the top end guys.
No, absolutely. It's going to be tough. That's why I think a guy like Jonathan Joseph makes sense. He's old enough, been around enough. They have coaching connections to him. Anyway, let's run through just the top so people know. We already saw Josh Norman sign a one-year deal with the Buffalo Bills. Byron Jones, the Cowboys corner, is going to be available. James Bradbury, Chris Harris, as I formerly mentioned. Jimmy Smith is going to be available again. Darrell Worley, Aqib Talib. There's a name. Does he do anything for you? Bradley Roby, former Bronco.
Aqib Talib would be somewhat interesting, but I guess the question with him is, I don't remember. I mean, I think in Denver, they probably had him playing enough man. That
a lot of these guys are going to be so expensive, too.
Yeah. I mean, that one feels a little bit hard to see.
Mo Claiborne, the Vikings brought him in, but wasn't he the one who suspended a bunch?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably not. Anyway, the list goes on and on. But Marcus Sherrills, he's available.
Might be retiring.
Marcus might hang it up. Marcus went through a lot last year. Bounced around to a bunch of different teams, injuries, all that. Ended up back here in Minnesota. And then they ended up cutting him.
They did.
So, yeah, he's been through a lot. I wouldn't be shocked if Marcus hung it up. But I think we should probably hang it up because we've exhausted our talking points and went through all of the available free agents in the secondary for the NFL 2020, whenever free agency begins. Need to thank you guys. Ben, do you have any parting words?
Well, the other thing I think we should keep in mind, just in terms of the guys that they have at corner, Holton Hill, Mike Zimmer talked about at the combine, said we've still got some work to do there. Mike Harris, I think everybody feels like is going to
Mike Hughes.
Mike, why am I saying Mike Harris? Injured Vikings.
Lost a lot of weight, turned the corner.
Yeah. Mike Hughes coming off a broken vertebra in his neck. I think everybody thinks he's going to be fine, but it's worth keeping in mind that he's coming off of that, and that was curious the way that all went down as well. It's not a group that has a ton of known commodities if those top three guys all go. So a position that has been a strength for them for quite a while after being probably their biggest weakness for quite a while could be at the other end of the life cycle here. It's definitely worth watching that because that group could look a lot different.
Yeah, no matter their draft intentions, even if they're sitting there saying, oh, you know, we love at this pro day that this first-round corner might be there at 25 that we're going to go after, I still expect them, and I'm sure you do too, Ben, to sign one or if not two free agents at corner and or safety.
Yeah, I think you have to do something.
They need bodies. And I do expect re-signings, whether it's Sendejo, some re-signings, low level, if Jayron Kearse finds his way back there. But in general, it's going to be these bargain level of veteran guys. Maybe they make a run in an Aqib Talib or somebody like that. But I don't see some big splash because they got to do a lot of maneuvering on the roster, as we have detailed at length for this five-part podcast. Thank you so much, guys, for checking it out. And please check out all of our work at StarTribune.com, and we will talk to you once the Vikings make some moves.
Maybe you should get off the podcast.